Welcome, everyone, to episode 2 of the NBA podcast presented by B-Ball Breakdown. I'm Brian Toporek, our loving host. Morton Jensen cannot join us today, but I am joined today by Sarah Chalea. How are you, Sarah?
I'm well, Brian. How are you hanging in there?
I'm awful, Sarah. I'm truly, truly awful. You know, usually we save our depressed fan segment until the end of the show, but today we're going to drop it right in the front, because if you were online, we're recording this on a Thursday, so if you were online last night at about 7 o'clock, out of nowhere, ESPN's Mark Stein broke the news that Sam Hinkie, the general manager of the Philadelphia 76ers, was resigning. This came exactly one day after Hinkie made an appearance on Zach Lowe's podcast, in which he defended a lot of his work and talked very openly about the whole rebuild that he's been going through. It just came out of nowhere, and I'm awful, because I bought into the overall process. I acknowledged that some of the execution was flawed, but I really thought the franchise had a long-term view in mind, and this move just doesn't seem to suggest that. So, Sarah, I'm going to ask you to talk me into this before I start ranting about why I hate it so much.
All right. Well, since you asked for us to try to find something to cheer you up, the first thing I found to support this move is probably not going to cheer you up. But so I'm going to lead with this, and then we're going to go into things that might make you feel better.
Oh, good. All right. Awesome.
All right. First thing I saw, I subjected myself to a segment of First Take today.
Oh, no. I'm so sorry.
And I will tell you that Skip Bayless and Stephen A. Smith are confident that starting next year, the Sixers will not stink anymore.
Oh, good. All right. Well, those guys, I really value their opinion, so that's wonderful.
They have complete and total faith in Michelangelo, so.
Great.
Yeah, I didn't think that would help a lot. But
no.
To play devil's advocate for you, I think, you know, Brian Colangelo, the easiest thing to go to is those 7 seconds or less Suns, obviously. He drafted Marion, mm-hmm. He drafted Stoudemire, he brought Nash in. Those were great teams, and he won Executive of the Year. Okay. Then, you know, you get to Toronto. It's not as terrible as it looks, maybe. I'm going to say, let's see, what did he do? Obviously, he drafted Bargnani number 1 overall. Okay. Yeah. You can make a case that it wasn't the worst move to make because it wasn't a strong draft. Well, he probably could have taken LaMarcus. They had Bosch already. I'm assuming the theory was Bargnani can step out. That way, you know, he's not crowding Bosch. He can pull out defenders to the three-point line. Okay, maybe. People have made the case that his draft profile was very similar to Kristaps. It didn't pan out, and that's, you know, every GM has hits and misses. When you start getting into the money that he was giving to Capono and Turkoglu and Landry Fields, who I always liked Landry Fields, but yet that gets a little less defensible there. He probably also, in that draft where they took Bargnani, I think they were looking for a point guard at the time, right, the Raptors? So he could have taken Rondo or Lowry, who they ended up with anyway, eventually. That probably would have been the move, but he's not terrible. You know, he's got his strong points, his arguments in his favor. Right. The way this whole thing went down is the worst part for me. It's definitely a little embarrassing for the organization.
Yeah.
And, not to paint Jerry Colangelo as like this snidely whiplash, mustache-twisting villainous character, but that's kind of how I've seen him going back to, you know, the way that he initially treated Greg Popovich for the Team USA stuff. You know, he overlooks him, but he's so smart that instead of having to explain why he overlooked him, he preempts that with, well, you know, telling everybody that Pop didn't want the job, wasn't enthusiastic about the job. That's amazing to me. that he did that, and kudos to Pop for basically telling him, don't talk about me ever again. But
I at last night, remember when Boogie tweeted his stake in the grass thing about George Carl? Yeah, I sent a similar thing So yeah, you touched on a lot of what bothers me the most about this thing. And I wrote about this at B-Ball Breakdown last night. This news broke and I just wrote for 4 hours. So it's really, I think two or three things really bother me. The first is, so the ownership hires Hinkie. And theoretically, Hinkie says, or he told Zach Lowe, he went into the room, he says, what do you guys want? Like, if you want to be mediocre, okay, I can do that. But the ownership told him, we want to build a contender, what does it take? And he said, you got to get a superstar. The easiest way to get a superstar is in the draft. And then once you get that superstar, it's easiest to retain him because of the way the CBA is structured. You can get, you know, you have an extra year. You can offer them more money. You can offer them higher salaries. So they said, okay. And they go this tear down, completely start from scratch, get rid of Drew Holiday, get rid of Thad, get rid of Evan Turner. Great. They admitted at the time that this is going to be painful and it's going to be really hard. And you're not going to win very many games. So Hinkie goes into the 2014 draft and Joel Embiid slips to 3 because of his foot injury. Now, if he's healthy, he's the number one pick by far, without question. He falls to 3 because of this foot, so there's risk involved. But in theory, Hinkie says, okay, I've got this long-term timeline. I have this job security where I don't need to win right now, which is what a lot of teams at the top of the draft, they're looking for that guy that can change their franchise, turn it around overnight. Hinkie was like, okay, Embiid's going to miss this first year. But he has the talent of the number one pick, and I'm getting him at number 3. So that, you know, if they were not okay with that, he needed to know that right then. So then he goes and picks Dario Saric, or he trades for Dario Saric with Orlando and gets our first-round pick back from the Bynum deal. And same thing. If Dario Saric came over in 2014, he's probably a top 7, top 8 pick. He falls to 12 because he can't come over for 2 years. But he has the talent of a top 8 pick. So it's like those two guys are the essence of the process. You're taking advantage of undervalued assets because they have some off-court, or not necessarily off-court, but something not related to their talent is holding them back from being valued as they should be. So that's great. That's fine. And in theory, ownership is behind it. You know, the last season was pretty awful, but at least, like, toward the end of the year, Nerlens started showing flashes. The defense, I think they ranked 12th or 13th, which is insane because they were playing with a bunch of D-League players in Nerlens. So, like, at least there was hope. There was, like a light at the end of the tunnel, especially with Embiid maybe coming back. So it really started to all go wrong on draft night this year, where they have to, it looks like Towns is by far the number one pick. Okafor looks like the number two pick. But then LA changes its course in like the last possible second, falls in love with D'Angelo Russell, takes him. The Sixers are now with two big men. They're kind of stuck because they still want to go BPA. Okafor probably, you know, he doesn't have the highest ceiling. Kristaps does. Moutier might even have a higher one, but they wanted someone, in theory, safe. And I'm now seeing how this all unfolded. I'm wondering, did Hinkie want Kristaps, and did ownership overrule him? Were they saying, look, you took your two home runs last year, now you got to go for a single or a double. Like, we need to show some sort of tangible progress. You know, like, a lot of us were very confused by the Okafor pick because it seems so not up Hinkie's alley. Like, he's been building around these, like, long, lanky athletes, great defenders, a fast-paced team. Okafor is a slow, plodding, low-post setter who cannot play any help defense whatsoever. Like, it doesn't seem like a pick he would make. So, like, looking at that in retrospect makes me wonder. And then, you know, they needed a point guard, especially after you take Okafor and you have two two guys who really aren't going to thrive outside of like 10 to 15 feet. You need a guy who could feed the ball to the post, and they didn't address that. So I really think this whole thing started basically at the lottery, at the 2015 draft. But then if the ownership tells Hinkie he's working on a 7-year timeline, and then they say, wait a second, 2 years in, we haven't made that much progress. We need to start speeding things up. That's not what he was doing. He was operating under the assumption, look, like, we had nothing when I came in. We had, negative. We had negative value. You had traded away Iguodala. You had traded away Vucevic. You had traded away Harkless. You had two first-round picks all in the year before I came. So I'm just, like, refilling, restocking your cupboards, basically. I'm getting our pick back. I'm getting a bunch of young talent. I'm making sure that we are not only set up to succeed in the near future, but once we start to actually make strides toward a 35, 40, 45 win team, we still have a bunch of assets that we could still build around. So then the fact that they did this whole switch and hired Jerry Colangelo after they start 1-20, like, it sent up some red flags, but I think a lot of us were thinking, okay, at least, like, maybe, you know, Hinkie sounded positive about it publicly. And of course, he's not going to, like, go out and start throwing shade at Jerry. But, you know, we all thought, like, okay, maybe they can make it work. Maybe Colangelo has this reputation of being this control freak, but maybe Hinkie is just like, you know what? I'll just figure out a way. And it sounds like he was still open to it.
They tried to, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw the Adrian Wojnarowski report today, but he just detailed. It sounds like everything was driven by Colangelo here. So it just makes me so mad that ownership caved. And it really puts all of the pressure on them now. Because in my opinion, now if this thing works, if the Sixers go out, if Embiid comes back healthy, if Sarge comes over this year, if they get Ben Simmons or Brandon Ingram, if they get the Lakers pick, people are going to credit Hinkie because he laid the seeds for all of this. And now if it doesn't work, who's left? Like, Colangelo is going to take the heat for this. So this is not a win-win for Hinkie because he's currently unemployed. But, like, his reputation either way is going to look better than it would have if he had stayed in the job and failed. Like, if he had struck out in free agency this summer, if they fall to 4 and have to take, like, freaking Buddy Hield. I'm just so bummed because I really thought, like, we all bought into what ownership said. Like, when they bought the team, they talked about how they wanted to build with a long-term process in mind. When Hinkie took the job, he said one of the big things was they valued process over results. So he was talking about the Andrew Bynum trade, and it blew up. It was a horrible trade in retrospect, but it's still defensible. And a lot of the pro-process people were also pro-Bynum. Mm. Like, that's the type of swing-for-the-fences deal you make. Like, if Bynum stays healthy, he is a franchise center. You could have him locked up for the next half decade. The game evolved, so, you know, during that time, you could wonder whether he would have been as valuable as he looked at the, you know, back in 2011, 2012. But he's the type of franchise piece the Sixers hadn't had since Allen Iverson. So we at least got excited about that. And the fact that they, it just seems like ownership got cold feet here. And it just, it's so discouraging. Because now I have zero faith this summer that they're going to do anything right.
Yeah. Well, what I like from your article that you wrote at B-Ball Breakdown, you said the Sixers could add as many as 4 lottery picks and 6 first-rounders to their roster before free agency begins. So like you said, Hinkie put them in decent position, regardless of, you know, if people want to agree with the way he went about it or not. And it's a disappointment, and it's kind of a shame that he doesn't get to see it through, like that he got this far and now he has to leave. But like you said, it's almost kind of works out for him because you get the feeling he's going to land on his feet somewhere eventually, and he doesn't have to see it through now. as disappointing as it is that he doesn't get to, he doesn't have to. So it's up to you know, the Colangelos now to make that work. But what you wonder is, I mean, it's not super surprising that they got cold feet, because, you know, this is such a what have you done for me lately, let's results now based business. But like you said, that, you know, they agreed initially that this was going to be a long process. They let him get, what, 3 years into it. What made them feel like they needed to bring somebody else in right now?
Yeah.
I've read so many articles today that I no longer even remember, but I think the theory was, you know, his lack of interpersonal skills. Is that what
people were saying? Yeah, they said, like, he's... Yeah. And that was a thing even in December, and that's why people were excited about Jerry, because he's the Team USA chairman. It's like that... You figure he's going to be the kind of public face. Hinkie doesn't like doing that stuff. He'll help smooth things over with agents, because they're going to, like, by all accounts, from Hinkie to Brett Brown to Colangelo, they're going to actually try to sign a free agent this year for the first time in 4 years. I'm glad you touched on that, because that's the big thing that's bothering me is, like, if you're gonna make this move, I think Woj reported last night that the ownership didn't think he was gonna step down, even if they hired someone else to, like, be co-GM with him or whatever the hell their plan was. If you're gonna make this move, like, the only two candidates that we've heard of are Jerry Colangelo's son and Danny Ferry. And I wouldn't have hated Danny Ferry, but, like, don't you do a wider search than this? Like, before the off season that is poised to make or break what you've been doing for the last 3 years? It seems insane to me.
Yeah, you would think. That's the part that bothers me the most. It rubs me the wrong way. I'm sure that's, you know, this is the way business is done more often than I like to believe. But, yeah, how do you get away with, you know, Hinkie's out the door last night, and within an hour or two, we're hearing that they're trying to get a deal done with Brian Colangelo today.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it's you would, I mean, I guess if you don't want anybody else, if you want him only, I guess don't waste anybody else's time. But it would have felt better for the fans to see them actually do a real search.
Right, especially because Woj's article today said Brian Colangelo wanted no part of this job. Like, he was...
Right.
He wanted the Brooklyn job, and, like, holy hell, you want the Brooklyn job? Like, no one wants the Brooklyn job. Brooklyn has nothing for the next 5 years. They've traded away all their picks. We have, like, young talent and a bunch of picks, and you want the Brooklyn job over this? Like, oh. Basically, this was the end of the Depressed Fan Scale segment, because we'll never, ever be as depressed as I am right now. This was... We broke the scale.
I wish Morton was here.
Yeah.
You know he'd be kind of twisting the stick.
Oh, absolutely.
He's a little sadistic like that. Yeah,
well, here's the thing. I would wish that Hinkie, like, the Bulls fire all of their people and Hinkie goes to the Bulls. But then, like, good for the Bulls. Like, whoever gets Hinkie next is going to cash in. And if he goes to, like, a place like Minnesota, oh, God, just watch out for the rest of the league. Like, you have that guy who has won every trade he's had for the past 3 years with Towns and Wiggins locked up for the next decade. Good night, NBA.
And you know what, too? Before we hung up the other day, Morton said, and, you know, we were talking about how this has been such a kind of gossipy, scandal-filled year here for the NBA, and I have to say, Morton said something big is coming. Something else really big is gonna happen. I thought, really? You really think so? I think we topped out at young D'Angelo Russell.
So we thought.
And he's like, no, something's coming.
He knew.
He was right.
He had sources inside the Sixers organization. He just didn't want to break my heart. All right, well, let's talk about something a little sunnier. The playoffs. The playoffs start next weekend. Things are heating up in both conferences. So let's talk about the East a little bit first. So right now, the 3-6 race has been fantastic for weeks. Right now, Atlanta and Boston are tied for third. Miami is fifth. They're only a half game behind those two. And then Charlotte is sixth. Charlotte's only a game behind. So it's really, it's up in the air. Any of those four, we don't know where they're going to end up. So Sarah, which Which of those four, like, how would you like to see that first round shake out? How would you like to see those matchups?
I would like to see, of course, this isn't through the first four,
Right.
but I would like to see the Cavs and the Pistons in the first round for 1-8. I just think that would be, I don't think the Cavs want to deal with that. I think they would rather have the Pacers at this point. For the Heat, I think the Heat are going to move up, but the best matchup I would think would be Hawks Hornets, which is where it is right now. And I would take Celtics Heat, but I don't think we're going to get that. I think the Heat are going to move up, but I don't know. What do you want to see?
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, so I'm still of the mindset that Miami, of any team that's not Cleveland or Toronto, Miami is that one that I could easily see going to the finals. So I
Right.
almost want them to avoid Boston because Boston scares me as
Yeah.
well.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that said, you know, I that Boston Miami series would be just fantastic. That's, oh my gosh, I have no idea who I would pick. Like I would lean Miami, but who knows? Like Boston has, they've just overachieved all year, so there's no reason to expect them to stop now.
You're going to be such a tough out.
Yeah.
They really are.
And now there's talk that Miami might sign Derrell Wright as well, which would just give them another 3-and-D guy right a week before the playoffs start. And who knows? I mean, we haven't heard anything about Chris Bosh in a while. The Heat have said they don't have any updates on him. I mean, we can't reasonably expect him to come back. But,
Right.
like, what a surprise that would be. Or, like, what an ace of the hole that would be if he comes back Friday night before the playoffs start. Oh, by the way, Bosh is coming back tomorrow. Okay. All right, cool. Yeah, I'm with you. I like Boston, Miami, Atlanta, Charlotte. And yeah, Cleveland, Detroit would be fun because Andre Drummond would just, oh, he would feast. Oh my God. It would be awesome.
Exactly.
And Tobias Harris would get, my boy Tobias Harris would get he would get the national attention that he's deserved since coming to Detroit.
Yeah.
Which would be,
Win-win.
yeah. And then Toronto, Indiana, like, that could be frisky. I like, you know, I don't think that series draws huge ratings, but Paul George against DeMar DeRozan would be fun. Miles Turner doing Miles Turner things would be fun. Like the East, I don't know how many first round upsets we're getting, but like the East, it's gonna be a bloodbath for the first time in how long? Like I feel like every year it's been top three or top four heavy, and this year, I don't know that anyone does win, but no, not a single team is gonna have a cakewalk. Like I don't foresee a single sweep in the first round.
I hope so. I hope it's nice and competitive.
Yeah. So, which of those four of the three through six do you think poses the biggest threat to Cleveland or Toronto?
Well, I agree with you. It's probably the Heat. Especially, you know, we'd all like to see Heat Cavaliers for many reasons.
Yeah.
Um,
Oh.
but I'm gonna give the Celtics some credit. I feel like, let's see. Of course, they got swept last year by the Cavs, but you know they have that year under their belt now. They
Right.
got Brad Stevens, they got Sullinger, Jarebko, all these guys to kind of pop out and shoot these jump shots and just mess with everything. Obviously, Isaiah Thomas is a terror. I think. Oh, Avery Bradley! I love Avery
Yeah,
Bradley.
he's so good.
So, man. I think that would be a lot of fun. So I'll go with the Celtics if you want to grab Heat.
I like it, yeah. And we get the bad blood of Kelly Olynyk and Kevin Love meeting up
Yeah,
again.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, that would be. How many technical fouls are going to be in that first game? Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I think any of those four could feasibly pull an upset. I'm not saying they're going to, but I'm also not going to say I'm penciling in a Cleveland-Toronto conference finals yet. Like, I think, especially, you know, Toronto, it sounds like Damari Carroll's coming back soon. He'll be back by the playoffs, but we don't know. But yeah, I mean, like Miami, especially since Joe Johnson has come, they've just figured out how to play that team. Like bringing Whiteside off the bench, Eric Spoelstra, he doesn't get enough credit for how good of a coach he is. Like people during the LeBron era just said, "Oh, LeBron's the coach." You know, he Spoelstra does, he holds them back. He doesn't do anything. You know, and that always happens unless you're Pop or Steve Kerr. Like, if you're the coach of a good team, the players get the credit when you win and you get killed when they lose. But Spo is a really good coach. And, yeah. You know, we talked last time about if we had faith in Tyronn Lue as a first-time head coach of the playoffs. Like, Spo's going to run circles around him.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, given the type of versatility Miami has now, like, they have very much embraced a small ball lineup, which Cleveland is not well equipped to play against. So, oh yeah, I'm dying to see Cleveland-Miami in the second round. Mm. All right, so let's move to the West for a little bit, because we can talk about your Spurs.
Yeah.
We'll do the 7 and 8 first, because I think that's the more interesting race at this point, at least. You know, 5 and 6, it seems like Memphis and Portland are in. We just don't know what order. So, last night, Houston laid a giant egg against Dallas. And now, Dallas is 7th. Utah is 8th. They're a game behind Dallas. And then Houston is now 9th, a game behind Utah. So, Sarah, as a Spurs fan, do any of those teams scare you?
I'll be honest with you. Of course, I'm a very, very careful fan. Like, I never want to put out there that I want anybody. I don't want anybody. I would take, you know, I'm sorry to do this, but the Sixers, if I could.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
But right now, to be honest, I would be more afraid of the Jazz and the Mavs. If I had to pick one, I guess I would prefer the Jazz. And I'm not talking about the Rockets, even though the Rockets have a good chance to get in there. I think they have the tiebreaker over the Jazz right now, going to record versus Western Conference teams. Okay. But they both have 4 left against the West, so that's subject to change.
Mm-hmm.
I have no faith whatsoever in the Rockets.
Right.
and I don't feel like they should get in.
Yeah.
I would rather see the Jazz and the Mavs hang in there.
I agree.
But the Mavs played really well last night. I mean, Dirk didn't have the best game, but they really played as a team. They really moved the ball. They defended hard. So, and I never want to see Carlisle in the playoffs.
That's fair.
And, you know, we all know what they did 2 years ago in the first round against the Spurs. Obviously, it's a different team, but yeah, I don't want to see them ever. The Jazz, the Jazz are younger now, and they have less experience. Maybe you think you can get them and teach them for a year, maybe, but. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they came back on the Spurs, what was it, Tuesday night? The Spurs were up 16, I think, going into the fourth quarter, and the Jazz had this furious rally. And they're formidable. But I would like to see them stay 8 and play the Warriors. They've played the Warriors tough all year. I mean, the Mavs could potentially give the Warriors some trouble, too. Carlisle's going to get in that zone and try to muck things up. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd like to see Warriors, Jazz, Spurs.
Yeah,
I'd rather the Spurs play the Jazz too, but Spurs Mavs would be a good first round series.
Yeah, I'm right with you. I think Utah of those three is the team that scares me the most. Mm-hmm. If I had any dog in the fight, which I don't, because I'm a Sixers fan and I can't ever dream of the playoffs. Especially so, it sounds like Alec Burks might be coming back in the next game or two. And that's the kind of thing, like, same with Miami and Darrell Wright, like, getting a guy back, and same with Toronto, Damari Carroll, too. Getting a guy back, like, a week before the playoffs that you haven't had for 3 or 4 months, like, that just adds, you know, it's not like the Clippers getting Blake back, where this guy is, like, a centerpiece of your team.
Right.
And you have to figure out how to, like, reintegrate him and not throw off the chemistry that you've developed without him. Like, Alec Burks doesn't have to play a big role. He can be 10, 15, 20 minutes off the bench.
Right.
But he just gives you another weapon.
Yeah, there's less pressure on that guy coming in.
Yeah,
than Blake.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And then, you know, Shelvin Mack has been playing at least reasonably well since they acquired him at the trade deadline. Gordon Hayward terrifies me. Mm. Like, I would not, you know, if you're up 2 and the Jazz have the ball with the last possession, I'm not excited about that scenario.
He's scary. The good news is Kawhi usually holds him down. That's the only good thing for us.
Good point. Yeah, I mean, Utah, as you said, they played the Warriors tough. I think pretty much every time they played them, or maybe the Warriors have beaten them.
At least twice, yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, again, I don't know. Like, the Warriors and the Spurs just seem to be so far above everyone else, even though the Warriors have hit, quote-unquote, a slump in the last couple games. But, yeah, I do think Utah is a little frisky and could maybe can't pull off the upset, but they could at least make it 4-2 and, you know, plant some seeds of doubt in whichever team they play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's go briefly to the West 5-6. So right now, Memphis and Portland are tied. Portland only has two games left, both at home against Minnesota and Denver. Memphis, meanwhile, goes to Dallas, at home against Golden State, at the Clippers, and at the Warriors. So basically, Portland is going to be the fifth seed, and Memphis is going to be the sixth seed. That's the schedule makers did not do Memphis a favor.
No.
So my first question is, do you think Portland has a chance of knocking off the Clippers and moving on?
I don't want to say no, just because obviously they have CJ and Damian that could get hot, but no, I think the Clippers are going to take that one. The only way that they might not is, say, they have a lot of trouble integrating Blake and their chemistry is thrown all off, and or he doesn't get up to speed, but I still think they have enough to get it done. Damian Lillard's going to have that chip on his shoulder, which is terrifying, but no, I think the Clippers are going to take that.
Yeah, I'm a little more high on Portland's chances. I think I'm not going into that series saying they're definitely going to win, but they've been playing really well lately, especially since moving Mo Harkless into the starting lineup. Al-Farouq Aminu's gotten a little more comfortable. He's been playing some stretch four. As you said, Damian and CJ, like, Damian's going to have that 40-point game where he just goes absolutely supernova. And, like, you know, the Warriors, they've lost now 9 times. Only one of those losses came by 20 or more points, and that was against Portland. That was the game where Dame went for 51. So, you know, Clippers are going to have home court. In theory, they're probably saving Blake. You know, they're not, like, pushing him too hard for these last couple games. They're just getting him back up to speed. So, you know, the Clippers definitely have the advantage in terms of firepower. Especially, like, I don't know who on Portland has a chance against DeAndre. I think that's going to be a big mismatch. But, you know, I'm reluctant to rule out Damian Lillard. Like, he thrives on the doubters, so.
Yeah, it's never good to rule him out.
Exactly. So the last question there is, which of the last of the top three, the Warriors, Spurs, or OKC, would you want to see the Grizzlies play?
Well, as a Spurs fan, I would be okay with playing the Grizzlies, which is usually not the case because they are such a scrappy team, but just with them just having nothing left almost, you know, obviously that's probably not, well, that might happen. Maybe they drop down to 7. I would rather see them play the Clippers. I know that's not what you asked. But I would like that just because they have that history. Of course, you know, it's not going to be the series that we've seen in the past because of what has happened to the poor Grizzlies. But that could be fun just because. But so I guess, you know, I'd take Spurs Grizz, but OKC Grizz might be what happens.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like, so they are 2 games ahead of Dallas and 3 games ahead of Utah. So it seems, I mean, you could reasonably say that they are probably going to lose every game from here on out. Or maybe they steal the one against Dallas. But Golden State now has incentive. They have to win out to get to 73. So they're not going to be resting guys on the last night.
Right.
So you could basically rule those two out. At the Clippers is going to be pretty tough. So They could very well fall to 7 or 8, and you could at least possibly get them as a Spurs opponent. I mean, the Clippers series would be fun because Lance Stephenson could have a revenge tour against Doc Rivers, and I just, oh man, would I? Nothing would be funnier than Lance and then Doc trading a first round pick just to get rid of Lance,
Yeah, see.
and then having him destroy the Clippers and knock them out in the first round. It would just be like the pinnacle of Doc as a GM. I think. Seems like it's probably going to be Memphis OKC, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Like, Conley's, it sounds like he's not coming back for the playoffs, so OKC, that's not going to be a fair fight.
Yeah.
But I do love Tony Allen against Kevin Durant. It
Yeah.
seems like,
That's something to hang on to, if that's what we get. Yeah.
for whatever reason, KD just really, Tony Allen always gets in his head. So it'll be really fun to see if that happens again. I mean, Russ will just go. Oh my gosh, he'll just go full supernova. He's gonna have a triple double every night because they're not. I mean, I don't even know who. You can't use Tony Allen on two guys. So good luck to whoever Tony Allen is not guarding.
Maybe they throw what, Nat Barnes on him? I have no idea.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I guess you could at least try that because that's their only hope. I feel like of all of those bottom four, I guess, including Houston, Memphis is the one that I just, there's no way. There's no way they get out of the first round, which sucks, but
Yeah, they just don't have enough right now.
yeah, they're too battered.
You think if the Doves should drop a game between now and then? No, that's a stupid question. Never mind. I was gonna say maybe you think they rest somebody that last game, but they still could tie the record. But reasonably, they could assume that they could win with resting some people against the
Yeah,
Grizzlies.
that's true. And I mean, if they lose, say that we're recording this on a Thursday, so Spurs Dubs in Oracle is tonight. If they lose tonight, and then if they lose on Sunday when they play the Spurs again, then they can't even tie the record. So maybe at that point they just say, screw it, let's rest. So yeah, that's a good point that Memphis might not be as screwed as their schedule might suggest, but they're pretty screwed.
But they probably are,
Yeah. So let's move on to our Where Amazing Happens segment, and we're gonna stick with a Spurs-centric theme for a minute. This year has turned into the year of 1,000 in the NBA. So Golden State is the first team in NBA history to hit 1,000 threes in a season. Steph Curry is the first player in NBA history to score 1,000 points off three-pointers alone. And now Tim Duncan has his own 1,000. He got his 1,000th regular season victory on Tuesday. I think Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Robert Parrish are the only other two who have ever done that, and he's the first one to do it with one team. So
Cool.
Sarah, just here's your opportunity to gloat a little bit. How has it been with Timmy for the last 18 years?
Can't even put that into words. It's been just so grateful to have had this whole time to watch him. I've only known Tim Duncan. I've only known the big three the whole time I've been a Spurs fan. So when that changes, it's going to be a really tough day. But for now, I'm just gonna celebrate 1,000 wins, and I mean, to me, that's so fitting that he should be the only guy to do that with one team. It's been fantastic. It's been hard these last few games, though, to see him. I don't know if it's a symptom of he said all year that he's adjusting to knowing what his role is. He's still trying to figure out what his role is on this team. So I don't know if he's kind of fallen out of rhythm too from not being asked to do as much, but he's still in there protecting the middle, and you still expect that he's going to turn it on when the playoffs come. But I don't know. I don't even want to talk about the future right now. So we're just going to hold on to 1,000 wins. So congratulations,
I
Timmy.
was about to ask if you thought this is the end for him. If he, no, even if I was gonna, I mean, if he goes out, if they win the sixth ring, I feel like he's got to just go out on top. But even if they don't, maybe he's already 40, right? Like maybe this is the end. But
Yeah, he will be, yeah.
we'll spare you that talk for today.
Okay.
We'll save that for once the playoffs start.
Thanks.
I do want to, I mean, regardless of what happens, Like, we've had this Kobe adoration tour all year, and it seems weird that we haven't done the same for Tim Duncan. And I know their personalities are so different, and Tim probably wouldn't even want that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Kobe gets the honorary all-star nod because it's his last season. But, like, for all we know, this could be Tim Duncan's last season as well. And it seems
mm-hmm.
weird to me that we didn't have any sort of recognition of that during All-Star Weekend, or, you know, even throughout the whole season. Like, we're not talking about this guy who is, you know, arguably higher on the all-time NBA greats list, or, like, they're right there with each other. You know, we're having a countdown. This is Kobe's fourth to last game ever. Tim Duncan, like, we're not going to get very many more years of him, regardless of if he goes at the end of this year or stays one more year. So, you know, I as someone who's not a Spurs fan, I'm not being a homer here. It just bums me out that Tim's not getting that same kind of recognition.
Yeah, yeah. It is weird, but it isn't.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of what you expect. There have been a few times over the course of the year where I'll stop and think, like you said, this could be it, and we're not acknowledging it. And probably a lot of people will regret that if this is it.
Mm-hmm.
But then I just stop thinking about it because I don't want to think about it.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, yeah.
All right, so Duncan wasn't the only one who got his name in the NBA record books on Tuesday. Russell Westbrook, 17th triple-double of the year, which ties him with Magic Johnson for the most in the past 30 years. So I'm wondering, you know, we've started, so at the end of the season, it's time to start thinking about awards and all that kind of stuff. Do you think he's the MVP runner-up behind Steph?
I think it's possible that the voters will go that way. You know, I have my Spurs goggles on at
yep.
the moment, so I would probably say Kawhi. But I don't know that they're going to give Kawhi quite that much recognition. I don't personally feel like he should be if I'm going to try to make an objective argument because of how terrible they've been in fourth quarters this year. And it's a lot of it is, you know, his decision making.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't argue with, I mean, that's an incredible accomplishment. The numbers that he's putting up to have that many triple-doubles too is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can't, if he ends up being runner-up, I don't know why we're arguing over it anyway, like it matters. There's
right.
one MVP.
Right.
But hey, if he ends up being runner-up, you can't really be that mad about it.
Yeah.
He's a terrific player, and he and KD pretty much keep that team as high in the standings as they are. So.
Right. Yeah, I think we have to argue about runner-up because for the number one is just so obvious. If
exactly.
Steph isn't the first year on his MVP, voters have done something wrong. Yeah, I mean, I submitted my fake ballot the other day, and I did actually have Russ second.
Yeah.
You know, you bring up a good point about the fourth quarter struggles, and he is nowhere near the defender as Kawhi. Like, Kawhi is a
right.
clearly better two-way player, and Kawhi has also taken major strides forward on offense this year. Like, he's assumed the leadership mantle. Really, the one, like, you expected to see that after the 2014 finals. And now he's really just full bloom. Like, he is that player all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't think there's not really a bad pick between Russ, KD, Kawhi, LeBron. Like, any of those four have a really good argument.
Right.
I just think, you know, we talked about this, I think, on the last podcast. So Russ goes, like, just he goes totally ham when KD and Ibaka are out at the end of last season. And people are saying, okay, well, yeah, he's got to pad his stats because those guys are out. And, like, once they come back, he's not going to do this. But now he's doing it with those two guys in the
right.
lineup. Like, he's really good. Like, even, I mean, it just seems like even the people who used to say, like, oh, Russ isn't a true point guard, he's not that good. Like, I haven't seen that as much this year. It seems like people have finally been forced to embrace, like, oh, he's, like, a top five NBA player. Like, he's incredible.
Right. Yeah, however you want to define point guard, I think people will still make those complaints, but
right.
I think maybe they're getting to the point where, does it matter?
No, yeah.
He's just
right.
a great player,
yeah.
and he's doing what his team needs him to do, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so because we have spent 20 minutes crapping on the Sixers at the beginning of this podcast, I want to take a look at one of our Atlantic Division counterparts, because they are doing something equally insane. Apparently, reports are that they are actually considering keeping Kurt Rambis as their head coach next year. Phil Jackson reportedly was, like, really pushing for this. Carmelo is not happy about it. He wants there to be an open coaching search, and he wants some input into the decision, which seems to suggest he wants anyone aside from Kurt Rambis. And now, today, Patrick Ewing started lobbying for his candidacy as the Knicks coaching job. So, Sarah, what do you think the Knicks should do here? Should they go with Rambis? Do you have another name in mind who would be a good fit?
I do not at the moment, but you know what? Haven't people been saying possibly Tibbs? I don't know if you want that job, but yeah, I mean, you say they're considering keeping Rambis, and I've seen that report as well. The question is why? Yeah. Like, what has he shown that was any better than what Derek Fisher was doing? I know he's only had however many games, but didn't we talk about this too? And this was not a podcast that we put out there to everybody. This was a while ago that we talked about this, but that he wants to play Kristaps at the three.
Yeah. Yep.
So.
Yep.
No, I don't see why we would want to go that route.
Yeah.
And like you said, Carmelo doesn't seem to be on board. I think they have to actually do an exhaustive search here and do some interviews, guys. And let's see who might be a good fit here.
Yeah, the Kristaps at the three thing is my deal breaker. Like that, when you heard that, it's just like, oh my God, this guy, he's operating in 1995 still, where where big men are patrolling the perimeter. Like, that's, no, he's a stretch five. Sorry, Kurt. I'm looking at the report from Mark Stein and Ian Begley. So apparently sources say Phil Jackson sees Rambis as the coach best suited to not only run the triangle offense he favors, but also manage the team using Jackson's long-held principles. So basically, the Zen master is trying to turn the Knicks into Lakers East. Except his Shaq and Kobe are a 32-year-old Carmelo Anthony and a 21-year-old or 20-year-old Kristaps. So that's going to go well. Yeah, I mean, I think Tibbs has definitely been thrown around. Apparently, Phil Jackson is not a Tibbs fan. Like, I guess he's more in the Rambis camp and doesn't think Tibbs is going to do the triangle. But yeah, it does. I mean, Tibbs is a great coach, and I think the Bulls have realized that this year under Hoiberg, what they're missing with Tibbs. Mm-hmm. I do worry what Tibbs does to Kristaps. Mm-hmm. Like, if he plays him
right into the ground.
I like seeing Kristaps be good, and I don't want his knees to turn into paper mache. So that does worry me. But yeah, I mean, my God, if they hire Kurt Rambis without doing a search, it would be like hiring Brian Colangelo as your general manager without doing a search. It would be so insane. You can't even talk about it. So let's move on to our boy Kobe. His last game is this coming Wednesday against the Jazz. And he says he doesn't want the Jazz to take it easy on him. Good old Kobe. Do you think, I think they have four games left, I want to say. Do you think we get one more vintage Mamba showing before he hangs it up for good?
I'm going to say one more, mostly because I hope for one more. But I'm just going to try to enjoy whatever we have left.
Yeah.
I'm not going to ask too much of Kobe. But I don't know. You think he just starts chucking? I mean, not that he hasn't been
right.
But yeah, do you think he goes all out?
I hope so. Like, he was just shameless at the beginning of the year. And I mean, he shot like, I want to say 30% from the field for the first month, and it was awful. And I wrote about it in the B-Ball Breakdown, how they just needed him to like turn it over to the young guys and just like rein it in a little bit. But screw it. Now they're locked into the second worst record. They have four games left. They've ruined D'Angelo Russell's rookie season anyway. Like, I want to see Kobe take 35 shots a game. Like, I'm just happy he made it through the season healthy. I think this is the first time he's done that in the last 4 years. So that's awesome. I'm glad he got to go out on this note, in the sense that he made it through the whole season, not that he, for the third season in a row, they set the franchise record for losses. That's not ideal, but I'm with you. I hope we get one more vintage outing from the Mamba. So let's move on to our weekly crush segment. And Sarah, let's start with you. Who do you have as your crush this week?
All right, I went with Tim Frazier.
Yes.
With the Pelicans. In 12 games with that team, he's been averaging 13.8 points, a little over 6 assists, 4 rebounds, over 1 steal, like 2.5 turnovers in 28 minutes. He set career highs on Sunday at Brooklyn. His first double-double, he had 19 points, 13 assists, 0 turnovers. He's just been playing really well. So well, in fact, that New Orleans fans are annoyed with him for not tanking well. But, hey, he couldn't help them beat the mighty Sixers. So
that's true. Just
let him live,
yes.
Pelicans fans. Let him live. He's making a strong case to stick around. Like I said, hey, if y'all don't want him in New Orleans, I would take him in San Antonio.
Yeah, he's been, I mean, I've been tracking him just for, like, fantasy basketball purposes, because, you know, this is the time of the year where those, like, random dudes just pop up and are, like,
right.
James Ennis on the same team has become fantasy relevant. Yeah, Tim Frazier has been, he's been a stud, and it kills me, because he was on the Sixers last year. Like, the Sixers signed him to 2 10-day deals, and he was flaming garbage, so I don't know where this came from, but thanks a lot, Timmy. At least I think that game against the Sixers, he was subtly tanking for New Orleans, because he was like, you know what,
yeah.
I owe you one, Sixers.
Good man.
Yeah. So, my crush this week, talked about him a little bit earlier, J.J. Barea, who I thought was kind of flying under the radar, and then he won Western Conference Player of the Week, so there went that idea. But so Deron Williams, who has been playing really well this year, I don't want to insult Deron Williams here, but he apparently has been playing with a sports hernia for about a month now. He aggravated it against Portland on March 23rd and has missed the last 7 games. Sounds like, I don't think he has a timetable to return still, so it sounds like we might not see him again this season, even if the playoffs start. But Barea, since coming in, he has, for the past 7 games, he's started 5 of them. He's averaging 22.3 points on 52.9% shooting, 6.3 assists, 3.3 rebounds, and 3 threes in just under 32 minutes a night. Dallas has won 5 straight after losing his first 2. And, like, once D-Will went down, you know, you see them without D-Will. Chandler Parsons is probably, presumably, done for the year. You see Dallas, and you're like, oh, man, they're in trouble. They might miss the playoffs. And little J.J. Barea comes back and saves their season. Like, it, I mean, he roasted the Rockets on Wednesday. 27 points, 8 assists, 5 rebounds. And it's amazing. It's just absolutely amazing. Because I feel like, you know, he went to Minnesota for a few years and he kind of fell off the national radar. And I'd say, I mean, I didn't really pay much attention to him since the 2011 finals where LeBron James, like, couldn't back him down, couldn't back this 5'8" guy down. Yeah, it's like, really nice to see that this guy is still having NBA success and is, like, having, you know, it's just amazing that he's having this kind, 4 20-point games in a row, like, to save a team season. It's just, good for you, J.J. Barea. Good for you.
Yeah, yeah, He's been fun. He and Wes Matthews last night, or was it last night now?
Yeah
last night. Yeah, they just started hitting threes. They sparked that whole run, and I think he had that and one to give them the lead right at the end. Well, actually, it wasn't right at the end because both teams went scoreless for a long time after
right,
that. But
right.
Yeah, I think that was the final score. That was his and one. Yeah, I've said before, he was one of those ones, you know, as a Spurs fan, for a long time, the two teams that you despised the most were the Lakers and the Mavericks. And he was one of the ones who was like the biggest pain in the ass.
Yeah.
And that's I meant that in the most complimentary way.
Right.
And I always appreciated what he was able to do. And like you said, he kind of fell off the map when he went to Minnesota. And that was a big loss for the Mavs.
Yeah.
So it's kind of neat that they got him back. And like you said, he's saving their season right now.
Yeah, it goes to show you that they should have never broken up that team. Like Tyson Chandler came back last year and he had a great year. And now he's garbage in Phoenix. And then JJ wasn't great in Minnesota, comes back to Dallas and is a monster once again. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what they're doing in Dallas, but they should just bring back that whole band.
Get it back together.
Keep it going. Screw Dwight Howard. All right. Well, that's all we have for this episode of the NBA podcast presented by B-Wall Breakdown. Once again, I was joined by Sarah Chilea. Sarah, it's been great talking with you, and we'll catch up soon.
You too. Hang in there. In Colangelo, we trust.
Oh, my God. All right. Take care, everyone.